So anyway, but moving on to BYU Oklahoma State. We've already gone over Oklahoma State, so this could be pretty quick.
Yeah.
They are coming off a bye week. And then I just saw last week that this is kind of – I'm leading with this and kind of cutting you off there because I'm like, this feels like the headline. And as of last week, you know, October 10th, Gundy has been very noncommittal on who the starting quarterback is because Alan Bowman, who started against Utah, has been really struggling.
He has.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a career low completion percentage at the moment. And he's at, which is at 59% for the season, and it's at 51% over the last three games, you know, so it's really? Just, yeah. And he's in the last three games, he's got 5 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So it's just, he's struggling. Right. And so Garrett Roundhill, I think that's how it's, that's how I would say it. Cause I think that's Spanish, but it could be, yeah. Anyway, Garrett Roundhill is, he's had some limited stats, but he looked good against West Virginia, if not against Utah. And so that's kind of the biggest thing for me is, are they going to make like large scale changes to what they're doing on offense?
It's really interesting again to see there's so many similarities between the University of Utah and Oklahoma State at this point. You know, they've got a 7th year senior playing for a coach who's in like 21st season with the team or 20th season with the team, player that's not performing up to his usual expectations. I'm sure a fan base that's frustrated by the coach's desire to hold on to this player. I think you're right. I think that, you know, what I've seen in the film as I've continued to watch Oklahoma State this year is that, you know, Alan Bowman, despite all of his experience, he has been putting the ball in some questionable positions. It is very much a potential for, with the way that BYU's defense has been playing, for it to be turnover central. You know, Bowman has a hard time with ball placement. He often puts the ball at risk, either too high or too low or too much air or not enough air under the ball. His wide receivers do fairly well when he is able to get them the ball. But that's just the struggle for him right now, is really trying to see, can you be consistent, even somewhat, in your ability to put the ball on the numbers at the right time in the right spacing with the defense.
Yeah, I think so. My whole like game plan here is like, so. Okay. Sorry. I have a few thoughts in my head right now. So the first thing, let me start with the run game. What in the world happened with Ollie Gordon? He's the Doak Walker Award winner. Idea. And I'm like, there's a chicken and an egg question here because they only run the ball 38% of plays. Their rushing offense is bad. Like it's bottom 20 in like all major categories. So How does that happen with last year's Doak Walker Award winner? I just don't understand it. So, and that leads me into the fact that BYU's rush defense isn't bad, but it's not like elite like their pass defense is. And so I'm like, when you're trying to put, I mean, you're struggling in general, right? And when you're trying to make your game plan go up against like the best part of the opposing team, it just doesn't really bode well. And so I'm kind of like, you know, what's going on? And then, you know, what are they going to do? Sorry, I like malfunctioned there for a second. And I just think that this game is ripe for BYU to make a lot of plays. And, we should be salivating, and I don't want to underestimate the opponent, and I don't want to get overconfident, but there is something to be said there. Like there is a feast ready to be had in this game.
Yeah. I think that you're exactly right. I think when you come up against a team who their best offensive weapon is their running back and they're not putting the ball in his hands, they're not giving him the opportunity to do what he does best. To me, that's again, another coaching error. It's incredible to me how much these players depend on their coaches making the right decisions from an offensive coordinator standpoint. You know, if you have a guy who won the award for best running back last year and you only give him the ball every 3.5 snaps out of 10, every 4 snaps out of 10. I mean, those are opportunities wasted, especially when you find that how explosive he is when he's able to find a seam. Now, one of the reasons that they might be playing it this way is when you watch the film, I don't know if they graduated a lot of guys. We could probably dive a little bit deeper into the personnel on the offensive line, but Oklahoma State just doesn't get a really, really great push up front, either on the offensive front or on the defensive front. But that could maybe be the reason, is they just don't feel like it's a really effective way to try to get the ball moving. But when he finds a seam, when he's able to either create for himself or when the offensive line does get good push, he's really dangerous. I mean, he'll score, you know, from 20, 30, 40 yards out.
Yeah. And I keep cutting across you. Go ahead. No, you're good. Go ahead and finish.
And I was just going to say, I think you're totally right that, you know, it is a bad matchup for Oklahoma State, whether they've got a quarterback that is aging and declining in his performance. You've got frustrated receivers who are maybe starting to give up a little bit on their routes. Who knows? And then you've got, if not this seventh year senior, you've got this other quarterback who's only got like 150 yards of throwing on the season, of passing on the season. And it's going to be it's a hard ask to ask him to go in there and try to put together a solid performance against what you say is a top 10 passing defense in the country. So,
yeah, totally, I think, right. Well, Garrett Rahnhell I don't even know if he's thrown 20 passes this year in game. And so, I mean, that's a concern. And as far as the run game goes, because I read an article last week about it, and Oklahoma State's offensive line has really struggled to run block this year. And yeah, so yeah, I have. Think there's something to be said there with why part of the reason the run game's struggling, but I don't know if I would say it's all on the offensive line. I don't know if maybe there's something these defensive coaches are picking up on. I don't know if it's totally a skill thing, and that would be something, I'd have to spend a lot of time digging into that. But I will say that the receivers are the strongest point of the team this year. You know, Ollie Gordon should be, but right now it's probably DeJon Stribling and Brennan Presley, right? And yeah. So Brennan Presley has had health issues, so I think he might be out for this game. But
oh, really?
Yeah, maybe not. I just saw that he has had health issues this year, and so Dwayne Lofton is a guy that has kind of had to step up the last few games. So we'll see. I just feel I'll jump into my prediction. I just feel like BYU is going to be able to stay focused and get on this. The other thing is Oklahoma State's like the heart of their defense. Nick Martin is out with injury.
Right.
So it's just, there's not a, I mean, the other thing is they allow 28 points a game. They allow 250 rush yards per game, which is 130 of 134 teams in FBS overall.
That's a lot.
So I just think with BYU's running backs coming back, their defense, and I just feel like BYU's going to be able to run away with this. So my prediction for this was 37-23.
That's
in favor of BYU. I thought I'd play it. Maybe I'll go 37-20. I'll shave off 3 points there and get 17-point victory is a lot. I know a lot of the time we see betting lines in college football and it's like, whoa. I'm going to Google it right real quick, but let's hear I want to hear your prediction as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that BYU can continue, like I said, to continue to keep their head down, you know, put their blinders on to everything else that's outside of this week. Like you said, I think it's a good matchup for BYU offensively. I think they're going to be able to have their running backs come back and begin to put in some good work against a defense which has typically struggled in the trenches. They have their eyes in the backfield a lot. I think they'll be very susceptible to a lot of BYU's trick plays. They'll be susceptible to lots of play action or counters or screens, things like that. All these things that BYU does. BYU is extremely varied in their offensive approach. So you're going to look for BYU to do a little bit of everything in trying to dismantle Oklahoma State's defense. On the other side of the ball, I think you've got a defense that is going to be hungry. If they keep on doing the things they're doing, like I said, it's going to be turnover central for the BYU defense if they continue to create turnovers the way that they have. I'm hoping this will be a breakout win for BYU. I'm hoping that they can put this away like 42-7, something like that.
That would be awesome. So I did just look up, this is per ESPN's bet. BYU's only 9-point favorites. And the other thing is it's a night game because it's Friday night. And so I'm dude, the Vampire Cougs are going to come out to feast.
Vampire Cougs.
What a weird thing that has happened over the last few years. Yeah, but
no, I love that. Anyway, I love it, though.
Yeah, it's fun. So,
okay.
All right, let's get over into Utah.
Yeah. So this is, we've had a lot of crossover. We've been able to be fortunate in not having to do a ton of game film watching or tons of scouting of players because we've been covering a lot of the same teams. We get a little bit of a refresher this week, or a refreshing take on a new team with Texas Christian University. It's been a while since the University of Utah has played TCU. I don't even have the dates on when the last time it happened, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that it was back in the Mountain West days. We've still got head coach Sonny Dykes at the helm, and he is leading an offense which thrives through the air. They've got number 10 quarterback Josh Hoover. He's 6'2", 200 pounds, is a sophomore. And so far this year, he is 162 for 236 for 2,007 yards of passing, 16 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of just under 80. Those are some pretty solid numbers, if I do say so myself.
So can I add a little bit more context to that as well?
Of course, yeah.
So that's about 335 yards a game, and he's throwing the ball 39 times a game, and he's not much of a runner.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a lot of throw. I mean, it is an air raid offense, so they're going to throw it a lot.
They very, very much thrive through the air. They've got two running backs that each have, their leading running back, number 4, Cam Cook. He's got 336 yards and 6 touchdowns on just under 90 carries. He only averages just under 4 yards per carry. So not like the biggest runner, but he gets enough volume where he does a little bit here and there. He doesn't do much for receiving. He's only got 44 yards of receiving on the year. So the same thing.
He does have 6 touchdowns, though. So I think he's red zone is probably a...
Yeah, yeah, which we'll see in the film. You know, they will pass their way down the field, and then as soon as they get into the red zone, they like to go spread still. They like to still spread you out and make you kind of stretch horizontally. And then they try to hand it off either at the middle or do like a power with an H-back or something like that with a tight end off the line. So you're right. Cam Cook, he kind of eats once he gets into the red zone or on the goal line. Number 26, Jeremy Payne, he's only got 120 yards rushing on the year. Also not much of a threat through the air. So the one thing that Utah can kind of rely on, and this kind of goes back to some of these basic things that we would hope to teach our newer listeners, are your line keys. When you're a defensive player, you try not to look in the backfield at the ball to see where the ball is going, because you can get tricked by, you know, pass fakes or run fakes or, you know, this fake pitch or that motion or that motion, you know, whatever it is that they're thrown at you to distract you. But if you look at what the offensive linemen are doing, if the offensive linemen get off the ball, you know, fast and going forward or going horizontally, you can be pretty sure that they're going to be running the ball. Versus at the snap of the ball, if those linemen stand straight up and start to backpedal, that's more of a passing line key. So I guess the good thing for the University of Utah defensive, you know, backfield, the linebackers and defensive backs, is that they will be more able to trust those line keys this week than I think during any other week of the year.
I'm going to backtrack to Cam Cook just a little bit, and this is just because there's kind of a personal tie here. So, first off, I did a little bit of research on him, which is kind of weird considering he's like not the feature of their offense, but he is known for being explosive. His college recruit stats, he ran a 4.58 40, which is pretty fast. It's not like elite fast, but but he ran a 4.01 shuttle, which I think is very fast and agile.
Very fast. Good change of direction.
Yeah. But he's put on a little bit of weight since he ran those numbers. I think he's probably more explosive, but the reason I bring it up is he went to Stony Point High School in Round Rock, Texas, which is an Austin suburb. And so when I lived in Round Rock, I was like 10 minutes from that high school. So I'm like, oh, hey,
that's very, very cool.
You know, like I know exactly where this guy is. So anyway,
stories.
Yeah. Right. The other thing was, and maybe you were getting into this, I think Jack Beck, I think that's how you say it. I think it's B-E-C-H, but I think it's probably pronounced Beck.
I have a fun
Beck.
Time imagining that he says his name like a California girl says the B word.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought when I was reading that.
And this is still a family and kid friendly podcast, by the way. I'm just saying his name. His name is Jack Betch.
So he's an LSU transfer. He's their leading receiver in catches and yards. He's got 700 yards, and he's 117 yards a game.
He's got twice as many receiving yards as the next receiver in line.
Yeah, so he's definitely a go-to guy for them. But yeah, so
you've also got number 7, JP Richardson. He has got 332 yards receiving, no touchdowns though.
He does have a special teams touchdown though.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he has a punt return touchdown against Kansas that was awesome. He can make cuts.
He can boogie. You've got number 3, Savion Williams. He is a whopping 6'5", 225. He is gigantic. He's bigger than Tetairoa McMillan. Probably not as fast or as quick, but he's got 31 receptions for 328 yards and 4 touchdowns. He averages 10.6 yards per reception. And they also have number 88, Eric McAllister, who is 6'3", 205, a little smaller than Savion Williams, but still pretty massive. He's got 322 yards on 3 touchdowns. So they've got 3 receivers that are all in like the 320s, 330s for receiving yards on the year, and then Jack Betch, who's got 700 yards. So those 4 individuals, number 18, number 7, number 3, and number 88, those are the guys that you, as a University of Utah fan, are going to want to watch out for, because those are the guys that if they are playing well and if Utah's defense is playing the way that they have been, those are the guys that could be causing us some problems.
Yeah, just kind of getting into like the ideas behind our offense. Sonny Dykes, he was a co-offensive coordinator under Mike Leach at Texas Tech. So he's definitely part of that Leach tree with the air raid offense. Yeah. But his principles specifically start with pass protection. I think he really emphasizes offensive line as like the most important part of the team. So they do run pass plays 61.5% of the time, which is good for 7th in the nation, which is even more than Arizona. I thought that was notable. They really emphasize, you know, fast receivers, short routes, scoring opportunities, get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. There's usually 4 receivers and 1 running back in a shotgun. They don't allow very many sacks per game. And they'll do some kind of deceptive pass protection, but that's just a little bit kind of into how they think. But I think that Utah has a good chance to make some plays here, considering how good their secondary is and that they're usually pretty good at a pass rush as well. So those will be kind of interesting. That'll be a really interesting matchup to watch, is the pass defense against their offense, specifically pressure and turnovers.
I think it's just going to depend on how well the University of Utah defense and Morgan Scalley as a defensive coordinator, how well they can kind of bounce back from this disappointing game last week against Arizona State.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, they'll definitely have the chance to if TCU keeps doing what they're doing and throwing the ball a lot. There'll be opportunities.
Bouncing over to the defensive side of the ball for TCU, a couple guys to, well, let's just talk very briefly about the defense that they run and kind of their identity as a whole. And then we can touch on a couple players that we probably need to keep an eye out for. Generally speaking, they do run a 4-2-5. We've seen a lot of that this year. We should be well familiar with what that looks like. But they blitz a lot.
Yes, they do. And Andy Avalos likes to blitz.
Yeah, yeah. They do double linebacker blitzes. They'll do, you know, a single linebacker with a strong safety, which we call a spear blitz. They'll do a single linebacker with a weak safety, which would be like a dog blitz. They will go cover one. They'll go cover two. I didn't see lots of cover three at all, but I'm sure they run it. I'm sure in longer situations, passing situations, I've seen them run a dime package, which is where you have your four downed defensive linemen, one single linebacker, and six defensive backs who all drop into coverages. Various coverages, but usually it's a cover two or maybe a cover four. And then in the goal line situations, kind of the red zone situations, third and short, fourth and short type of stuff, they'll go up to like a six or a seven man front, just with the remaining four or five defensive backs or linebackers kind of hanging out very, very close to the line. So lots of kind of basic packages that you'd see a lot if you've played, I don't know, 5 minutes of NCAA college football. But it brings to mind that line from Remember the Titans with Coach Yost. You will blitz all night. That's basically TCU's defense.
I love that scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Another yard.
That's TCU's defense in a nutshell.
Yeah, so Andy Avalos is their defensive coordinator. He was Boise State's head coach from 2021 to 2023.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he runs a base 4-2-5. And before he was at Boise, he was at Oregon as a DC for a couple years. And he was Boise's DC for a long time before that. But he'll run funky formations, including a five-man formation, a three-man. I mean, you talked about the goal line packages and the dime package. So
yeah. Yeah, I didn't see as many of that. I watched the TCU Stanford film, and they ran just mostly a 4-2-5. But yeah, I'm sure if you watch some of the films, they might have some different packages.
Yeah, so I watched the Kansas film and the I'm trying to remember what the other one was. Well, I watched two games. Oh, Houston. So I feel like they were a little bit more versatile with what they did. They had a couple of three-man fronts. I don't remember seeing the five-man front off the top of my head, but I saw an article specifically about how he does his five-man fronts, and those are probably more Boise, but they still are a work in progress, though, because they're struggling. They allow 200 rush yards a game.
Which bodes well for Utah.
Yes, and they allow 37 points a game. So they're better in the pass defense, but, like, still, I don't know. And then I think the reason they struggle stopping the run, from what I could see, is even when they get guys in the backfield, they tend to be poor tacklers, and they get moved easily, so to speak.
They're very aggressive, which is good. You want your defensive line and your linebackers to be aggressive. They can get really good penetration up front and have a really aggressive pass rush, but they get a little undisciplined getting too vertical as they, you know, are able to make it past that first, you know, little bit of the offensive line, which opens up lanes, right? If a running back is able to slip right past that blitz, you're totally exposed, which is, I think, where a lot of offenses are able to be successful. They do show a tendency to jump a lot on hard counts, or if teams are going on a different snap count that is, you know, other than just going on one. So I feel like they either are going to smother the run or they're going to get beat pretty bad with it with a poorly timed blitz. That's just kind of what I've seen from the film.
I feel like, you know, we talked about read option with Cam. Well, that won't be happening, but if they do a read option with Isaac, I think that they, like, I felt like their defensive ends got over eager sometimes. And I'm like, that's Isaac gives the ball every time, you know, Bernard or as they'd say in Britain, Bernard, I think, Bernard. Yeah. I think that's how they, I don't know, maybe I'm not remembering that right. But Bernard will, I think he'll have a heyday if, I mean, he should anyway, but you get what I'm saying. So,
A couple people to focus on. Do you have any defensive linemen you want to focus on, Dion?
Just Zach Chapman. He's 6'5", 255. He's a versatile D-line who can really, he can play both end and tackle.
Yeah.
He was a depth player. Yeah, he was, well, and I think some of that kind of may come into those funky fronts.
Right.
So he was more of a depth player at the beginning of the season, but he does have 2 sacks, and I think he's getting more playing time, seeing that he's been pretty successful. So
cool.
Yeah.
As far as linebackers go, 2 guys to pay attention to. Number 57, Johnny Hodges. He is 6'2", 240. So he's a big fella. He is one of the team leaders.
A Navy transfer.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He is the team leader with 46 tackles. He tackles a lot, but that's basically all he does. He has no sacks, no forced fumbles, no interceptions. Number 4, Namdi Obiazor. Obiazor, I don't know how to pronounce that. Namdi, number four. He's 6'3", 220, a little bit more of a typical linebacker size. He's got 38 tackles, including 2.5 sacks, 1 forced fumble, and 1 interception. So one guy that tackles a lot, one guy that tackles a decent amount, and also kind of gets his fingers in the pie in different ways.
That reminded me of, remember the Titans when he says, looks like we got Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. Jerry tells the jokes, Dean sings the songs and gets the girl. That was just clapping. The way you described that sounded like that, like the cadence sounded very similar. Yeah. And so that came to mind.
Dean Martin, number four, Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, exactly.
In the defensive backfield, number 2, Jamel Johnson. He is 6'1", 200, you know, pretty basic size safety there. He's got 42 tackles. He's the second leading tackler on the team. He's got 1 forced fumble, but no interceptions. And then number 21, Bud Clark. I love that name, by the way, Bud. He's 6'2", 185. He's got 28 tackles. Those three are your leading tacklers on the defense, which whenever I see that there are 2 linebackers and 2 defensive backs that are your leading tacklers, that I think
does
that
not bode well for running.
Does not
for
bode
the
well
other team.
For,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So for University of Utah, that probably means you're going to be somewhat successful in being able to get Mekhi Bernard the ball downfield, at least hopefully getting if the first tackles he's getting are coming from linebackers and defensive backs, that bodes really well. So,
yeah, I think so. For my game plan basically that I had for Utah was to run the ball well. And then run good coverages, maybe disguise some of those coverages, which will lead to turnovers, which I did see Josh Hoover or Hoover. It's got to be Hoover.
Hoover.
He threw a pick against Houston, where he just didn't even realize the safety was there. And he had a very similar one against Kansas that just a safety. He just threw it right where the safety could get it. And he just didn't even see it. So that's why I bring up, the coverages on defense is I could see he's young enough of a quarterback that I could see Scally throwing some complications at him with coverages and disguising some of those and having it really bode well for them and force those turnovers because TCU is going to score points. And so,
I
think it'll be important for BYU or for Utah to control the game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it will be a little bit more of an offensive battle. Well, I don't know. Maybe this game could go on one of 2 ways. I feel like we could be one of those games where both defenses kind of bend a lot and then kind of start to break, and you know, we might have like a 40. It'd be really exciting to have a repeat of that old matchup, the old, you know, dark mode game, the blackout game from like 2009, whatever year it was, where Utah won with a field goal. It was like 49 to 47 or something like that. Or it could be one of those games where it's like 15 to 12, you know, kind of boring. Yeah. I could see it going one of two ways. So,
well, which one are you going with?
I'm going to go with something along the lines of, yeah, like maybe like 20 to 15, 20 to 14, something like that for Utah.
Okay. I'm going to go with 37 to 30 Utah.
Oh, well.
And mm-hmm. say that you, so that they have a hard time stopping TCU, but a couple of turnovers kind of helps them to stay ahead. And I think
I would love that.
Bernard will have a great game, and I don't think TCU's pass defense is decent, but I think the run game will do enough to be able to play action, open some stuff up for Isaac to make.
I mean,
some
don't
throws.
Get me wrong, I would absolutely love that. I would love that to be the case, but I'm just going on the side of what we've been doing lately, which is not scoring lots of points, but playing, you know, pretty solid defense. So,
yeah, yours is probably the wiser yeah. prediction.
Yours is more fun though. Okay. Anything else to add?
That is everything.
Okay. All right, everybody. That is your scouting report for this week. This is week 7. You've got BYU versus Oklahoma State. I believe it's here in Provo on Friday night. I think the game time is 8:15 Mountain Standard Time or Mountain Daylight Time. And then you have got Utah hosting TCU for the first time in a long time. That is Saturday at 8:30. Mountain Daylight Time. So we appreciate you guys listening. Hope you had a good time. Hope that you guys feel like you are well scouted and know what to look for when you're going into these games. We appreciate you guys, and thanks for listening. You guys have a good week.